we'll be talking about a combination of classic and new technologies to map and fine map aphid resistance in soybeans. Thanks.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's like a nap time for Chinese people, so I took a nap just to make sure that I didn't doze off, but I will make sure that the slide is interesting enough to keep everybody awake. So, as Nathan just said, my topic is a combination of classic and new technology to map and fine map soybean aphid resistance in soybean. I'm from the Michigan State University. So, soybean aphid, if you take a look at this picture here, they are really tiny. Their body width is less than 1 millimeter. They are an invasive species that originated from China since 2000. So they feed on plant sap. As you can see, they can be all over the plant. Therefore, they could result in curling, wilting, yellowing, stunning, and sometimes death of the plant. Another effect of the soybean aphid is that they secreted honeydew. And this honeydew will result in the infection of the sooty mold. The sooty mold is blackish. So the blackish sooty mold will block the photosynthesis. Then by the end of the season, if you take a look at the two pods in the middle of the picture, they are really skinny and tiny. That's because the photosynthesis was blocked by the sooty mold and also the soybean aphid infection earlier in the season. Another damage aphid did is that they transmit viruses. So this will result in a lot of quality loss as well. So this picture shows you the range of soybean aphid damage. It almost covers half of the U.S., especially in the Great Lakes region, and also include Minnesota as well. And we use $9 million to control soybean aphid in Michigan only. That is the data from 2003. So here, by control, I mean that application of the foliar insecticide. So you can imagine it costs a lot of money and it's not environmentally friendly. As a breeder, I'd like to breed for soybean aphid resistant varieties. How can we do that? First, we need to screen for soybean aphid resistant sources. And this picture shows you there are around 10 resistant sources identified in the Middle West, among which 5 of them are from our lab. After we find the resistant source, we want to pinpoint the resistant gene from the resistant source. Then we want to transfer the resistance gene into the elite cultivar. As this picture shows you that the elite cultivar with the resistance gene has much less aphid. So therefore, by the end of season, they can have a much better yield and quality. Eventually, we want to pyramid different traits based on our demand. So we want to have a variety for the farmers that not only have aphid resistance, but is high yielding and has a good protein content, for example. So here I want to point out, pinpoint is the most important but time-consuming step. Why it is most important? I list a few reasons here, but I distribute a flyer to you guys because I won't have time to talk about the details. It's why we are doing the pinpoint step and how we can use it. So generally, it helps us to save time, labor, money, and space, and also facilitate the precision breeding process. As I mentioned, we have 10 soybean aphid resistant sources. However, some of them already lose their resistance due to aphid evolution. So we need to identify new sources of resistance and discover new genes. Today I'm going to talk about a new accession called PI567537. I will use 37 as abbreviation. So now we have the resistant source. The first thing I do is to pinpoint the resistance gene. How can we pinpoint a gene? We first cross the resistant parent with the susceptible parent. At the F2 generation, you can see that the genetic material from both parents can exchange randomly. We call this process recombination. So if you take a look at each individual at the F2 population, you would say that they have pieces from both parents. And then because our parent, one is resistant, one is susceptible, so in F2 population, some of the individual is resistant, some of them is susceptible, some of them is in between. Now we have these markers, genetic markers, that we can simply think it as a landmark of the genome. They can distinguish between the resistant and susceptible parent, and also they label where exactly it is in the genome. So in this case, I labeled our resistance gene in pink here. So our resistance gene is most close to marker 3. If the recombination event happened as I just described, the marker 3 has a less chance to separate with the resistance gene. This is our base to do the mapping process. So we first need to have marker data for each individual. We call this genotyping. We also need to rate how resistant each individual is, so we call this phenotyping. Then we combine phenotyping and genotyping data. We use a regression algorithm to assess the distance between the marker and the resistance gene. So for the phenotyping, we collect leaf tissue from the soybean plant. Originally, we were using SSR marker, and then now we are switching to SNP marker. So if you're focusing on the red square here, for the SSR marker, we can only take data for a few individuals at a time, and we need to run a gel. But for the SNP marker, we can do 384 individuals at a time, and it's through the computer, we don't need to run a gel. So it's much high throughput and more convenient. Also, we have this 50K SNP chip for massive genotyping. For the aphid resistance evaluation, we are inoculate 2 aphids per plant at the V1 stage and evaluate at the 3rd and the 4th week. And we rate from the most resistant to the most susceptible from 0 to 4. As you can see that there is a distinguished distribution from the resistant to the susceptible. So eventually, use the phenotyping and genotyping data, we use the algorithm to assess the distance between the marker and the resistance gene. We were able to locate our resistance gene on the chromosome 16. And it's between the interval of 10 megabase. So how big is 10 megabase? In 10 megabase region, we have 1,500 candidate genes. So at this point, we won't be able to find out which is our resistance gene. What we need to do next is to narrow down the mapping region. Here shows you how I construct the fine mapping population. Basically, I cross the resistant and susceptible parent and bring them to a few generations. And then before I start the fine mapping, I confirm the resistance gene by the mapping process that I just told you guys. And if you take a look at this picture, the curve shows you that the peak is way above the threshold. And this is a typical mapping result. And you can tell that it only gives you a curve and its estimation of where the gene is, but it won't tell you where exactly it is. Like, you don't know it's either at marker 3, marker 4, or marker 5. So for fine mapping, I'd like to describe it as a matching game. If the genetic marker is very close to the gene, the alleles from the resistant parent would result in the resistant plant. If the alleles from the susceptible parent would result in the susceptible plant. So I won't be able to describe everything on this chart here for you guys, but let's focus on the red square here. If you took a look at the blue section here, it says allele Y, so which means this allele is from the resistant parent. Our phenotype here shows that it is also resistant. So now we are matching the genotype with the phenotype. So we're doing this, and then originally our resistance gene is between marker 1 and 5. Now we narrow down the region, the resistance gene is between marker 4 and 5. So we are pushing the border to a narrow region. Just to conclude, originally we have a candidate region around 1,500, have around 1,500 candidate genes. Now our candidate region only have 20 candidate genes. We zoomed in for 50 times. That's pretty dramatic. What's next? The first thing we can do is to combine next generation sequencing technology to find out the resistance gene. But what is more interested to our breeders is to combine, to use the fine mapping results to contribute to the breeding pipeline. We want to use the markers to help us transfer and parameting all the traits together. And therefore, we could have varieties available for the farmers. And the flyer that I distribute for you guys describe very detailed how we do that. Now I want to show you guys the chart. That's our breeding results. So these two varieties was entered in state commercial variety trial. It is competing with all the other commercial varieties. If you take a look at the middle column, it shows you that the yield is very close to the top, and the ranking is very close. Also, only this two variety has aphid resistance, while the other commercial varieties don't have it. I feel like it's a pretty exciting result, and I hope that our effort could benefit the farmers and also the community. Finally, I want to thank my committee members, especially Dr. Wang, who is sitting here, and also the Trade Society, Applied Soybean Research Community, and Nathan has been helping us a lot, and my lab members, friends and family, and also the funding sources. Thank you.
Questions for our speaker? Questions? Aphid resistance, yep.
What's the life cycle for these resistant genes? So you talked about early on that you were losing some of the inbred resistance. Generally, what's the life cycle of that inbred resistance?
Okay, so the question is, what's the life cycle of this resistant gene? Do you mean how long they can last, the resistance? Okay, I mentioned earlier there's one of the resistant gene was not resistant in Michigan anymore. I think it lasts around 3 to 5 years. So it's pretty tough that that some of the gene already losing the resistance when we reach in the point that we have a variety. So what we are doing now is to parameter different resistant gene together so that it's less easy for the aphid to combat. Okay, so for the 50K SNP chip, it's like a whole genome. It's like a genome wide. And
so how many of those 50,000 SNPs are in your 20 candidate genes, or do you have to go ahead and develop new SNPs?
Oh, okay. They can cover most of the genes. So if we don't have the SNP covering, we can use the next generation sequencing data to help us. That's what I've been doing. Oh, sorry, I forget to repeat the question. It is, what is the coverage of the 50K SNP chip for the candidate gene?
Any other questions?
Real quick, short question.
Thank you.
Thank you.